Good evening. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, and we are studying the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter and step is the doctor's opinion, and our speaker tonight is Laura W. Thank you so much, Laura. Take it from here.
Oh, great. That was fast. Hi, everybody. I'm Laura. I am a compulsive overeater and gratefully recovering. I would imagine I could say recovered. I'm not used to saying that so much because I've been in OA since 1981, and that's just how we were trained to say recovering. But I do understand that to be recovered means to have, as I understand it, to be have neutrality around the food and to be actively living in steps 10, 11, and 12. So I guess that qualifies me as being recovered. So I am gratefully just for today. So I just said I've been in OA since 1981. I want to give a quick elevator speech. I don't know if you know what an elevator speech is, but that's when you tell your story and like the time it goes from one floor to another floor in an elevator. And then I'll elaborate just a little bit just to fill it out and then tell you. I would imagine that step one is going to underpin all of my share, because I believe that step one is the underpinning of every single step and everything that I do in recovery. I had to fully concede to my innermost self that I am a compulsive eater. I'm not going to change. I'm different than others who are not compulsive eaters. And that underpins and pushes me towards all the other steps. So I hope that I can get that message across. So here's my elevator speech. My name is Laura W. I live outside Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I came into OA in January of 1981 thinking it was a diet club. It took 6 months to come back to my second meeting, and I've been coming back ever since. It took several starts and stops of abstinence before I completely admitted powerlessness over the food and began to recover from this disease by learning to live in the steps every day, one day at a time. In admitting powerlessness, I learned to reach for power with a capital P and a saner way of relating to the world and to my life. So that's how I think of my higher power these days, as power with a capital P. And I do, I do realize that I needed power, and I was able to find power from keeping coming back from 1981 to today's date, and that's how it grows. So I came into OA. I didn't really, I mean, I believed in God, I guess. There is one God, but I didn't have any relationship with God, if you want to call God power or however you want to name it. And I don't know that I even have a good name for God. I just, I use God like other people say because it's convenient, right? I love the acronym Good Orderly Direction. Many times that is definitely, how I point myself, and I'm always trying to point myself towards GOD. Anyway, so I came into OA and didn't really have a personal connection with a higher power, didn't really know much about it, and was just really, as opposed to being frightened, well, I was frightened by what I saw was religion, because the meetings were in a church and they said the Lord's Prayer back in the day at the end of the meetings. And so I really thought it was a religious organization and that it wasn't my religion and I shouldn't be there. But I did identify that the very first meeting that I went to in January of 81, that I identified with what everybody was reading. I identified with this, I don't know if I identified with turning things over or anything like that. No, I think that probably was part of what scared me because I didn't know what it meant. But anyway, suffice it to say, and without going into all the details because there's not enough time, I went to the first meeting. I felt like I belonged there, but I felt like maybe I didn't belong there because I wasn't the right religion. So I didn't go back to my second meeting until 6 months later, when someone told someone I know who was going to the meetings, tell your friend not to confuse religion and spirituality. And that was the key for me. And that was a person who was the same religion as me. So that was the key for me to be able to go back into these churches and say the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting, because I was not supposed to confuse religion and spirituality. And I bought that. I thought that was a great idea, concept to hang on to. And I also heard keep coming back, and I've kept coming back since that Tuesday. Was it Tuesday in Jen? And yeah, I think it was Tuesday in June of 1981. Now I, at that point, I got abstinence almost right away. I was struck abstinent with a food plan called 301, three meals a day, nothing in between, one day at a time. I said, I have binged. Are you allowed to name foods in this meeting? Yeah, not if you're, it's okay to say a food, or no, if I'm not, it's okay. I could binge on lettuce. If I was scared to death of gaining weight, I could binge on low calorie foods very easily. I found low calorie candies to binge on. I was very good at finding calories out and working around caloric values and playing all those games. I never got very heavy. I never weighed more than about 30 pounds. Well, I shouldn't say that. After I gave birth to my son, I did weigh almost 200 pounds. But in not pregnancy states, I never weighed more than 30 or 35 pounds heavier than I am today. I had terrible body dysmorphia. I looked at the parts of my bodies that weren't as beautiful as the ones in the teen magazines and the magazines of the time, and thought that I was fat because my thighs didn't look like their thighs, and my, you know, nothing about the lower part of my body looked like anybody else's that I could see in a magazine anyway. So I had a lot of body dysmorphia, and I looked at the worst parts of myself and thought I was fat. All this to tell you, I probably only had about 30 pounds to lose when I first came into OA, but I lost and gained that same 30 pounds almost every year from the time I was 13 to the time I came into OA in January of 81. By eating that 301 food plan, cutting out between meal eating, I lost 25 pounds in 3 months. That gives you an idea of the quantity of food that I was eating between meals. Just by cutting out my between meal eating, and I ate whatever I wanted. I ate planned desserts, planned alcohol. You know, as long as it was planned, it was okay. On my food plan, it was written, it was okay. The only problem with that first abstinence, and it was really beautiful, it was a pink cloud abstinence. Believe it or not, I stayed abstinent for 3 months eating whatever I wanted to eat, as long as it was planned. I broke it with an unplanned glass of wine, and I spent the next 9 months, this was in September of that year, I spent the next 9 months trying to get that abstinence back. And guess what? I had gone over the edge. I had crossed the line, and there was no going back to that one. During that 9 months, I never not came to OA. I worked the steps to the best of my ability. People, you know, took me through, my sponsor took me through the steps, took my inventory. I don't know how much of the other steps after step five I actually formally did. I do remember making amends. I don't know exactly how I did step six and seven. I know I didn't have a regular practice of 10, 11, and 12 because I didn't know about it. You know, people didn't teach you how to do it back in the day. At least I, not at the meetings I went to. In any event, I need to hurry up because I do want to get to the doctor's opinion. So back in May of 1982, that next year, my binging got completely out of control, completely. And it was not in control for 9 months. It was like on again, off again, on again, off again. And I would imagine that some of you know this experience, that the eating that I did in OA was worse than any of the eating I did before OA, because I didn't know what I was doing before OA. I had no clue. And once I knew what I was doing, you know, they say a head full of OA and a belly full of food is the most painful thing in the world. Well, it was tremendously painful. And while I didn't gain my weight back, I started to inch back up. Because I'd had abstinence, you know, coupled with binging, you know, periods of a week and then break it, and 2 weeks and then break it. I really did struggle. And during that period of time, I realized that I had to not eat certain foods, that the foods that were on my food plan were really trouble for me, and that I also couldn't drink alcohol because every time I drank, I wanted to eat everything in sight. And I don't know if that's true for everyone, but everything I say and everything I believe in my heart, I have to believe in my heart for myself. I can't force it on anybody else. I don't make anybody else do what I do, but it's a very important thing for me to realize that I became, I don't, if I wasn't before, and I think I was before, I just had a honeymoon of a pink cloud, I became a true compulsive overeater for sure during those 9 months of being in OA. I crossed the line. I wasn't going back, even if there was a back to go to. I don't know if there was, because I probably was eating compulsively from the time I was a little girl. So deep down, I realized I was different. And in May of 82, I became abstinent. May 14th, 1982. And it was a Friday morning. Can you imagine getting abstinent on a Friday morning? I didn't think I'd make it through the day. I really didn't. I was afraid to call my food in because that's what we did back in the day. And I said to the person who took my food, please don't tell anybody I called you because I don't think I'm going to make it to the end of the day. Like she was going to tell somebody I called her with my food. But that's how crazy I was thinking at the time. So anyway, I'm going to move on to say that I became abstinent on May 14th, and it was 1982. I was very young. I was in my early 30s. And fast forward 42 years later, I think it is, in May, it's going to be, maybe it's going to be 43. Let's see, 82 to, this is 2000. No, it's going to be 42. It's going to be 42 years in May. I'm still abstinent and I've kept coming back. I haven't gone to meetings every week because I've been on vacation and haven't always been. But some of you know I've gone to meetings on vacation. I call in from wherever I go sometimes. And sometimes I don't. And sometimes I just find other meetings. And sometimes I just pray my guts out. Don't go to the meeting. Anyway, so let me let you know too. I came into OA in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's where my husband and I had moved from Brooklyn, New York in 1973. I lived there till 1985. I moved to the Philadelphia area for the first time in 1985. We couldn't afford to live in Philly, so we ended up over in Jersey at that particular point in our lives. And I lived in Cherry Hill, New Jersey from 85 to 88. In 88, I moved to Highland Park, Illinois. I think it was 90 or 91, we moved down to Columbus again. And then 92 or 3, we moved up to Chicago again. And in 1997, I moved to the Philadelphia area and lived here since then. Every time I moved, I connected with OA way before I ever got there. I knew before, I even found a house to live in that I needed to connect with OA locally. And that's always the way I felt, and it's just the way I still believe today. Okay, so in 2013, I went through the big book for the first time from the beginning, from the first page where the I don't have a copy of the book that has the AA insignia on the front, but from the very first page where my sponsor had me write, this is what you all it is nothing on the page. This is what you know about alcoholism, and there's nothing on the page. That's what she had me write. This is what you know about alcoholism. So in 2013, I went through the big book with a sponsor who did that kind of thing, or step guide, really. And I have some fantastic notes in my book because of that experience that I had with her. Oh my goodness, there's only 6 minutes left, right? Is that true? Okay, we've got to get to that doctor's opinion. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? Okay, at the top of the doctor's opinion page, and I've got a, I'll show you, I don't know if you can see, this isn't a regular big book. This is like a study guide big book, so I don't have the right pages to tell you. But at the top of the page, she had me write, this is a textbook, which is a transfer of information. It is not a novel. This chapter, this is on top of doctor's opinion, this chapter deals with the first half of step one, powerlessness and physical allergy. The principle of step one is honesty. And that's what she had me write before we started reading the doctor's opinion. And the doc, and Dr. Silkworth, when he wrote this, he really took he really was taking a big risk, because he was saying that, you know, what he's been doing all these years with psychology only works on people who aren't truly addicts, or maybe aren't addicts yet. They could be potential addicts, but they didn't cross the line yet. And he says, and I hope I can find exactly where it says that. Oh, here it is. It's on one. Wait a second. I'll tell you the number of pages. One, two. It's on the third page of the story. He says, "What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge." He's saying that we can't do this as doctors with just science. Something more is needed to affect the transformations. And I don't remember exactly where he says the transformation, but that transformation is necessary before this person can stop drinking. And a transformation from reading the spiritual awakening at the back, the appendix at the end of the book, is nothing more than a transformation in thinking and feeling and acting. So he talks about an allergy. He says it's not an allergy as, you know, a typical allergy like to strawberries where your face blows up or something like that. It's an allergy, and as I understand it, the allergic reaction is that the substance or the behavior never satisfies the desire. It only intensifies the desire. And I just heard that in the last 10 years, that idea that my desire could never be satisfied, never. It only got intensified. And that's what made it impossible for me to be able to predict if I could eat something safely or not. Alcohol or desserts or whatever it is that's on my list of alcoholic foods. Let me see what page. I'm sorry, I don't have page numbers. But at one point he says, he's telling about the people who started AA. He says, they believe in themselves and still more in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. And she had me write this note, and it's so true. The disease keeps me from enjoying my life way before it takes my life. I was living, I also have written somewhere else in here, I can't remember where in the book, that compulsive eating for me was suicide on the layaway plan. My life was being taken away from me a day at a time the longer I stayed in that food. One of the most, I think, powerful paragraphs in this doctor's opinion is where Dr. Silkworth says, men and women drink, oh, I only have 2 minutes left, essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can once again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, or for me, eating whatever I want.
Eating, 2 minutes left.
Thank you. Eating which I see others taking with impunity. Impunity, that means it doesn't affect others. Impunity means without punishment, without an effect. And I had that effect. So I was looking for the effect of ease and comfort, and I couldn't get the effect of ease and comfort, but from working this program for 43 years, since 1981, I had this insight. Let me share it with you. The consciousness of God's presence, which is talked about on page 51 in the big book, creates the sense of ease and comfort that I once sought from food. I was looking to food to take the edge off, and now whenever I need the edge taken off, I can shoot a prayer up or a meditation or whatever you want to call it. I can take that moment and pause and get a sense of ease of comfort, even from just saying, oh, God, help me, or thank you, or wow. I get that sense of ease and comfort mainly from, oh, help me. Oh, help me. That's stepping outside of myself to know that I can't do this. Anyway, I'm going to go so there's not a noisy buzzer that turns me off. And thank you all for letting me share. I have tons and tons to share, but I'm going to be quiet and listen to for you now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Laura, for your presence, for your sharing. We really appreciate it.
Oops.
Oh, and where are we? Sorry. All right, we will now open the meeting for questions or 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. Again, that's the doctor's opinion. We ask that you accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions or *9 if you're on the phone. I will call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Would the timekeeper, Lisa, please set a timer for 3 minutes for each share and announce when time's up? If the speaker is asked a question, please allow 3 minutes for the answer. We've got some hands up already. Give me one moment here. Okay. So, Leslie G, could you... you're up to share.
Hi, family. Hi, family. Leslie G, recovering one day at a time. Laura, thank you so much. You said some awesome things, and unfortunately, what you said went faster than my hand. So if it's possible to recollect the last two things you said, Laura, one was my disease was... my life was busy. My life was being taken away from me one day at a time. But right before that, you said something about my disease. Do you know the sentence that you said, hon?
I said the disease keeps me from enjoying my life way before it takes my life.
Okay, wait. The disease
keeps me from enjoying my life way before it takes my life.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hi, Sydney, compulsive overeater. Leslie, thank you so, or Laura, sorry. Thank you so much for your qualification. I related to a ton and got so many great things from it. I love when you said when you cross the line between when there was no going back. For me, I crossed that line too. I probably always was, but there was a time where I turned and there was no going back. Like I could not eat food safely. I could not have my will with food. And I also related to like, I didn't think I could make it through a day at the beginning of this. Like it was so hard for me to just get through a day. One day was just, it was unimaginable to me. And I am doing opposite action right now by sharing, being on camera, because all I want to do is isolate. And I've been having a ton of like mental health stuff come up, but the truth is that I just need to stay closer to this program, closer to people, and get out of the isolation. I love also what you said about this disease keeps you, what you were just repeating, from dying, but like it will settle for miserable for a really long time. You could stay in this disease really miserable for a really long time. And that's not the life that I want, but that's the life that my disease wants. And it's really powerful. So I have to do all of the things to keep it from overruling my life. And it'll come in different ways if I'm not putting this first, if I'm not doing the work, if I'm not sharing, if I'm not putting my camera on. Like I have to make sure that I'm putting this before all things. And I love what you said about ease and comfort, that you get it from your higher power, because for me, I eat or I go into my eating disorder because I don't feel safe and comfort. I feel scared and fearful. That's my go-to state. I'm terrified of life. I'm terrified of everything and everyone. And that's at my core who I am. And I'm still developing my relationship with my higher power. So it's right now, it's not strong enough to dissipate my disease. So I'm in a lot of fear and uncomfortability. And I just pray that it doesn't always have to feel this way, that I can get a stronger relationship with a higher power that enables me to not be a ball of fear and anxiety, because the food is down for me, but I'm mentally really anxious and scared. And when I try and turn things over, there are things I can really well and other things that it just feels really scary. So that's my time. And thank you.
Thank you, Sydney. And next up, we have Nancy AZ.
Hi, I'm Nancy, and I'm in Phoenix, Arizona area. And
Nancy, you just got muted. Are you able to unmute?
Oh, I thought I unmuted myself. Wait.
We can hear you
okay,
now.
Okay, I'm unmuted, right?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay, sorry. I'm Nancy. I'm from Arizona. And I just want to thank Laura very much. And I really like what Sydney shared. I ditto every single word she said. And I ditto every single thing that Laura, you shared. And I wish I wrote it all down. But I just... The main question, okay, one of the things I just wanted to share, you know, you've been in this program a really long time, and which is very phenomenal, but I feel like I'm new again, which I am. I had 9 months of abstinence, I guess you can call it pink cloud too, but then I got back into a relapse, which I'm in now. And my question to you is, which, by the way, in my relapse, I'm like a tornado going through life, affecting everyone, sweeping everybody up in the tornado, ripping everybody apart, ripping apart myself. It's absolutely insane. And I wasn't like this when I was 9 months, you know, in the steps and in a recovery. But I wanted to ask you, Laura, since you said you've been in and out and that you didn't get it right the first year or something like that. You're kind of in a different type of apps. I don't know. I can relate to what you were saying, but my question is, how did you get back to staying in it for 40 years and like having recovery for 40 years? Like, how did you do it? Was there any one particular thing?
Well, I was very fortunate. My break from abstinence was 9 months. It was early on in my recovery. I do know people, a person who's my local sponsor came to program for 12 years struggling, and she's been abstinent for almost 40 years now. So, you know, don't ever stop coming back. That's the most important thing. If you're abstinent or you're not abstinent, keep coming back. It's just, I think that's the mantra to say. One of the reasons I did the work in 2013 that I did through the Big Book was because I wanted to learn how to be a better sponsor. I wasn't real happy with the method I was using to sponsor at the time. And it turned out, because I earnestly did the work, I realized that I was not happy, joyous, and free, even though I was abstinent many, many years from 1982 to 2013. But and believe me, I wasn't miserable. I had a good life. But I was still bogged down by so many of my character defects that I couldn't seem to break free from. And going through the steps again, and I'd been abstinent all those other times, going through the steps again through the Big Book had such a transformative effect on me, especially realizing how much I was trying to control my situations around my life, maybe not just the people, but everything. how I was continually wishing that things hadn't happened. I was just living in a place of unreality. Unreality. And between 2013 and even now, I've taken another couple workshops of deep dives. And the more I work, you know, the better it gets, the more I'm able to have that neutrality around life. The same kind of neutrality I can have around food. Now, no one's ever going to get perfect neutrality around life. You'll be, you know, we'll be angels floating up there in the some ether somewhere. No one's perfectly has equanimity all the time. But I'll tell you something. I am not so appalled at the mistakes I make, at the humanness or my people in my life's humanness. So keep coming back, because everything gets better. The bad stuff lessens in, was it frequency, duration, and intensity. Keep
Can I just say one thing really quickly, just so other people can hear too, is that I had 9 months of like a wonderful, like everything. I was really, just what you said, all that stuff. But then what happened is over the hall, I must've got some pain. Somebody hurt me. But then I also got a free dessert, and my significant other and I, he took most of it, and I took one bite, and that one bite developed into 5 months.
Sorry, Nancy, we have to get everybody else in. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Laura. Thank you, Nancy. And Peggy, you're out.
Hi, everyone. I'm Peggy, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Laura. My question has actually kind of changed since I've heard some different chairs in your my original question was, okay, that's 42 years. Like, what I guess I wanted to ask you was, you know, with all the different, I don't know, gyrations that happen in OA and opinions and this way and that way and whatnot, I have found for me that oftentimes, I don't know, I just get really frustrated and confused by that and all the, you know, different opinions. And so I would go out, and then I come, then I'd get desperate and I come back in, and then I'd feel that same way. So anyway, my first question, I guess, was, did you feel that? Or how did you manage all the different gyrations throughout the years of OA? And then when you just said about the in 2013, and maybe I just didn't get it, but could you please elaborate, in 2013, when you experienced that happy, doing the steps differently, happy, you became happy, joyous, and free, what was different about, with maybe it was the big book, I don't remember, and what was different? Like what was it? What was the shift that happened with you when you started living that way?
Okay, so first of all, keep coming back. Keep coming back. That's what I told myself. There were times I threw away all my OA books because I said I'm done with this crap. I'm sorry. Sorry to say that to anybody. But you know, I'm going to be as real as I can be. It's been a lot of years since that's happened. But you know, I've learned to be true to myself. My sponsor always got me this coin from AA. It says, to thine own self be true. And that's what program's teaching me, to be true to myself. The real transformation happened for me just before step three. Reading, my sponsor had me personalize pages 60 to 62. And when I read those pages out loud, personalized, and basically they are, I'm not going to read them, I promise you, because I want other people to be able to share. But it's basically saying, I am, the first requirement is that I am convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, I am always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. That was key to the first part of the transformation. The second part that really helped a lot was in the fourth step, in the resentment inventory. The fourth column, she had me do something called a turnaround, which is, and it's a little different than than another kind of turnaround that I've learned later, which is also very powerful. But this particular turnaround helps me with steps 10 on a regular basis. And that is asking myself, when did I ever do whatever it is I'm upset with? When did I ever do this to someone else? Like cut someone off in traffic or, I don't know, not be honest or not, you know, whatever I am, I'm resentful at, when did I ever do this? Maybe not to the same degree, but did I ever do this same thing? And that was such a shift for me to realize that I'm just like everyone else. And if I'm going to, and I believe in this forgiving higher power, then I've got to be able to forgive others for being human too. And I learned how to be human and to make mistakes and to say, oh, you know, they do it, I do it, we all do it. And I don't know, those were the two transformations for me.
Thank you, Laura. We will now stop the recording for unrecorded questions or shares.